Chapter 2, Prisoner in Castle Dracula. May 8th. I am beginning to feel that there is something very strange about this place. I need to write only facts in my diary to control my imagination. When I got up after a few hours of sleep, I started to shave. My shaving glass was by the window. Suddenly, I felt a hand on my shoulder, and I heard the Count's voice saying to me, "Good morning." I was greatly surprised that I had not seen him in the mirror. I jumped and cut myself slightly. There was still no reflection of the Count in my mirror, even though he was just over my right shoulder. Then I saw the cut and the blood on my chin. I turned, and when the Count saw my face, his eyes blazed with fury. He suddenly grabbed for my throat. I backed up, and his hand touched the string of beads which held the crucifix. It made an instant change in him. The fury passed so quickly that I could hardly believe it was ever there.
"Take care," he said, "how you cut yourself. It is more dangerous than you think in this country."
Then seizing the mirror, he added,
"This is nothing but trouble. Away with it."
He wrenched open the window with his terrible hand, and he flung out the mirror. It shattered into 1,000 pieces on the stones of the courtyard far below. Then he left without a word. When I went into the dining room, breakfast was prepared, but I could not find the Count anywhere. So I breakfasted alone. It is strange that as yet I have not seen the Count eat or drink. He must be a very peculiar man. After breakfast, I did a little exploring in the castle. Doors, doors, doors everywhere, and all locked. There are no exits except the windows. I am a prisoner. As soon as I realized this, I heard a door below shut. I went cautiously to my room and saw the Count making the bed. This only confirmed my suspicions. There are no servants in the house. Now I am sure it must have been the Count himself who drove the coach. Why did all the people at Bistritz have some terrible fear for me? Bless that good woman who hung the crucifix round my neck. It is a comfort to me. 12th May. Last evening the Count began by asking me about legal matters for shipping.
"Suppose," he said, "I wish to ship goods, say, to Newcastle or Durham or Dover. Would it be easier to hire a lawyer to claim these goods when they arrive?"
I explained to the best of my ability. When he was satisfied, he suddenly stood up and said,
"Except for your first letter to Mr. Hawkins, have you written any letters?"
I answered that I had not.
"Then write now, my young friend," he said. "Write to Mr. Hawkins and any others that you shall stay with me until a month from now."
"Do you wish me to stay so long?"
I asked, for my heart grew cold at the thought. "I will take no refusal. Your employer sent you here to serve me, did he not?"
What could I do but accept? It was Mr. Hawkins' interest, not mine, and I had to think of him, not myself. Besides, while Count Dracula was speaking, there was something in his eyes and in his bearing which made me remember that I was a prisoner, and that even if I wished to leave, I could have no choice. So I wrote the letters with a growing sense of dread. When he left me, I went to my room. After a little while, I looked out the window. I found some sense of freedom and peace in the vast and beautiful view of the countryside, bathed in yellow moonlight. As I leaned from the window, my eye caught some movement below me. The Count's head was coming out from a lower window. At first, I was amused by this coincidence, but my feelings changed to repulsion and terror when I saw the whole man slowly emerge from the window and begin to crawl down the castle wall like some huge black insect, face down with his cloak spreading out around him like great wings. At first, I could not believe my eyes. I thought it was some trick of the moonlight, but I kept looking, and it was no delusion. What kind of man is this? or what kind of creature.
I feel the dread of this horrible place overpowering me. I am in fear, in awful fear, and there is no escape for me. May 15th. Once more I have seen the Count go out in his insect-like fashion. When he did this, I decided to explore more of the castle. All the doors I tried were locked. At last, however, I found one door at the top of a stairway that was unlocked but difficult to open. I exerted all my strength to push it open enough to permit me to pass. I found myself in a room that was probably used by the ladies of the castle long, long ago. I liked this room and its view, so I sat down to write in my diary. Later, the morning of 16th May. I swear I am not mad, but there are things here that put my sanity to the test. It is maddening to think that there are foul beasts here worse than the Count, and that I must trust him to keep me safe as long as I am useful to him. When the Count warned me against falling asleep in other rooms besides my bedroom, I was frightened. But after I had written in my diary, I felt sleepy. I was still in the room at the top of the stairs. The moonlight was soft, and the couch in the room was inviting. I stretched out on the couch and fell asleep. Suddenly I woke, or I thought I did. Perhaps it was a dream, for there in the room, with me, were three ladies. It seemed like a dream because the ladies cast no shadow in the moonlight. Two were dark and had great dark piercing eyes that seemed to be almost red. The other was fair, with great masses of golden hair and eyes like pale sapphires. All three had brilliant white teeth that shone like pearls against the ruby of their full lips. I felt longing and at the same time deadly fear. They whispered together, and then all three of them laughed, such a silvery musical laugh, but also inhumanly hard. The fair girl shook her head coyly, and the other two urged her on. One said, "Go on, you are first and we shall follow. You have the right to begin." The other added, "He is young and strong. There are kisses for us all." I lay quiet, looking out from under my eyelashes in an agony of delightful anticipation. The fair girl advanced and bent over me till I could smell her breath. It was bittersweet, smelling of honey, but also faintly of blood. She was both thrilling and repulsive, and as she arched her neck, she actually licked her lips like an animal. Lower and lower went her head as her lips went below my chin and seemed to fasten on my throat. I could feel her hot breath on my neck. I closed my eyes and waited with a hammering heart. Ah, too suddenly, I was conscious of the presence of the Count, as if he were a storm in the room. I saw his strong hand grasp the slender neck of the fair woman, and with a giant's power draw it back, her blue eyes transformed with rage. But the Count, never did I imagine such fury. His eyes were blazing red, like the flames of hell. He hurled the woman from him, and then he raised his hand against the others. In a voice that cut the air, he said, "How dare you touch him when I had forbidden it? This man belongs to me." The Count then said in a soft whisper, "I promise you that when I am done with my young friend here, you may kiss him at your will. Now go." As I looked through half-shut eyes, they seemed to fade into the rays of the moonlight and pass out through the window. Then the horror overcame me, and I sank down unconscious. 19th May. The date of my death is approaching. Last night the Count asked me, in the nicest way, to write three letters, one saying that my work here was nearly done,
and that I should start for home within a few days. Another, that I was starting on the next morning from the time of the letter, and the third, that I had left the castle and arrived at Bistritz. I could not refuse, as I am totally within the power of the Count. I therefore pretended not to be worried, and I asked him what dates I should put on the letters. He said,
"The first should be June 12th, the second June 19th, and the third June 29th.
I know now the span of my life. God help me. 28th May. There is a chance to escape, or at least to send word home. A band of gypsies have come to the castle. Perhaps they will help. All attempts to communicate with the gypsies have failed. At first, they seemed very polite to me as I shouted at them from my window. After a little while, however, they just ignored me. 17th June. This morning, as I was sitting on the edge of my bed, I heard the cracking of whips and the pounding of horses' feet up the rocky path. With joy, I hurried to the window, and I saw two great wagons, each drawn by 8 sturdy horses, each driven by a Slovak, with wide hats, great nailed studded belts, dirty sheepskins, and high boots. I cried to them. They looked up at me stupidly, but the leader of the gypsies said something, at which they laughed. Afterward, no effort of mine would make them even look at me. Their wagons contained great boxes, with handles of thick rope. These were evidently empty by the way the Slovaks handled them. When they were all unloaded, the Slovaks rode off. 25th June. I must take action of some sort during the day. I have not yet seen the Count in the daylight. Can it be that he sleeps when others are awake? If I could only get into his room! There is a way, if one dares to take it. I have seen him crawl from his window. Why should not I imitate him and go in by his window? It is a terrible risk, but I must take it. Same day, later. I was successful. When I entered the Count's room, it was completely empty except for a great pile of gold in one corner, coins from all countries and ages. The large, heavy door was open, and I searched around the old, run-down castle. Finally, in the basement, I made a discovery. In one of the underground rooms, I saw about 50 great boxes half-filled with newly dug earth. Most were uncovered, and in one lay the Count. My blood ran cold, but it seemed as if he were dead or asleep. His lips were as red as ever, but there was no sign of movement, no pulse, no breath, and no beating of the heart. I thought he might have the keys on him, but when I went to search, I saw his dead eyes, and in them such a look of hate that I fled from the place. Leaving the Count's room by the window, I crawled again up the castle wall. Regaining my room, I threw myself panting upon the bed and tried to think. 29th June. Today I fell asleep in the library and was awakened by the Count, who looked at me grimly. He said,
"Tomorrow, my friend, we must part. You return to your beautiful England, and I to my work. When my workers and I have gone, my carriage shall come for you, and shall bear you to the Borgo Pass to meet the coach from Bukovina to Bistritz."
I didn't believe him, and I asked, "Why may I not go tonight?" He smiled such a soft, smooth, diabolical smile that I knew there was some trick behind his smoothness. He moved to the window and said,
"Wait, listen carefully."
Outside came the howling of many wolves. It was almost as if the sound sprang up as soon as he raised his hand. I knew there was no escape at night when such creatures as these roamed the woods. After a minute or two, I went to my own room. The last I saw of Count Dracula was his kissing his hand to me, with a red light of triumph in his eyes. 30th June. These may be the last words I ever write in this diary. Today, I climbed down the wall again. I made my way to the box with the count in it. This time, it was covered. But the nails were not hammered in yet. I needed the key to the front gate. So I moved the lid aside, but then I had a shock. There lay the count, looking as if his youth had been half restored. His mouth was redder than ever, for on his lips was fresh blood, which trickled from the corners of his mouth and ran down over his chin and neck. He seemed like a fat leech resting after gorging himself on blood. I shuddered as I bent over to touch him, and every sense in me revolted at the contact. But I had to search. I felt everywhere, but there was no key. While I stood there thinking, I heard the gypsies' merry voices coming down the tunnel. Quickly I ran and climbed back up to my room. Soon I heard the sound of the gypsy wagons leaving. I am alone in the castle with those horrible women. I shall try to climb down the castle wall to the courtyard. I must find a way from this dreadful place. If this is indeed my last entry, goodbye all. I love you, Mina.